First public hearing is subdivision 2007-19, Ameristar Homes.
This is an application to consider the subdivision of land in a MR medium density residential district in Cedar Creek 100, Sussex County, dividing 34.32 acres into 80 lots. Located on the northwest side of Road 619, approximately 900 feet north of Shawnee Road, being Route 36. Gentlemen, before you, you have revised preliminary site plans and a large exhibit booklet. Which is a part of the record. All the commission members have a copy of it. It was introduced prior to the 72-hour rule. And I would ask Mr. Abbott if he's received any additional comments from any agencies.
Mr. Wheatley, we received one comment. It's from the Office of State Planning Coordination. It makes reference to the location of this project. As noted in our original letter, this project is located within a level 3 according to the strategies for state policies and spending. Level 3 areas are comprised of longer-term growth areas and growth areas with sensitive natural resources on or surrounding the site. While a new site plan was not provided by the engineer, it appears that from his letter that the developer has addressed many of our issues regarding the development of this site, and the state looks forward to working with the developer as they move forward with this project. And that was signed by Constance Holland, the director. On May 25th, we received a fax. It's addressed to whom it may concern. We recently received a notice of public hearing where the Planning and Zoning Commission is considering an application for Ameristar Homes to subdivide 34.32 acres into 80 lots for residential housing. The City of Milford's resources are already stressed by the rapid population growth of this area over the past 5 years. Police protection, fire company, and roads are already overburdened. Adding an additional 80 homes to this area will increase the need for these services. Further, I am concerned about the potential traffic problems that are likely to result at the point where Road 619 intersects with Route 36. At the very least, I think that DLDOT should investigate the potential traffic problems before approving the application for this subdivision. We ask the County Planning and Zoning Commission to reject Ameristar Homes' application to subdivide these 34 acres of farmland due to the additional burden it placed on the City of Milford's resources. And that was signed sincerely, Brett and Natalie Venable. And on June 25th, the applicant's attorney has submitted proposed findings of facts and conditions of approval, and I'll pass a copy of those down. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, sir, thank you. The chair recognizes Ms. Hansen.
Thank you very much. My name is Stephanie Hansen. I'm an attorney with Young Conway Stargett and Taylor here in Georgetown, and my Delaware bar ID number is 4101. I understand that was an issue with, a long time ago.
It certainly isn't anymore.
That's so, right.
Thank you very much. Proceed.
With me, I have a number of people with me tonight. The first person that I want to introduce is Mr. Greg Rice. Mr. Greg Rice represents Ameristar Homes. The next person I'd like to introduce to someone I'm sure is very familiar with you is Keith Rudy from McCrone. I'd ask you to be gentle with Keith tonight. He's a cripple. He fell in Ameristar due to a slippery floor. He had an ice pack on for a while, back issues. So I brought my handy laser pointer, so maybe we don't have to make him work quite so hard.
If you're more comfortable, you may remain seated when you give your testimony. It's up to you.
I'll be fine. I think my pride is the biggest thing ever.
Okay, then.
Also with me are Shayna Phillips and Amy Alsfeld from JCM Environmental. We've had quite a bit of environmental review of the site. And Mr. Don Dean from Builders First Choice is with us as well, and he will be doing the marketing for the community. The applicant, as you know, is Ameristar Homes of Delaware. Ameristar Homes of Delaware is part of the larger Ameristar Homes, Inc., a residential builder in Severna Park, Maryland. They've been in business building residential homes for about 12 years, and they have projects in 17 different locations in Maryland. They received the 2004 Builder of Integrity Award from Quality Builder Warranty Corporation, and they're qualified as a certified master builder. And this is significant because of the 2,300 builders in the state of Maryland, only 28 qualify as certified master builders. And in order to qualify, they have to be able to show that they have financial stability, experience, references from home buyers, references from government agencies, and good inspections of homes under construction. They're also licensed to construct homes in North Carolina, which I understand is not a very easy thing for them to do. And they construct exclusively single-family homes. Before I go any further, I'd like to, with your indulgence, kind of introduce you to Mr. Greg Rice, have him come up to say hello to you, why they want to build in Delaware, if that's all right, Mr. Chairman.
Go right ahead.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Greg Rice. I'm a principal of Ameristar, and about 10 seconds you'll realize I'm a builder and not a public speaker. Ameristar is a builder developer. We develop property and build around 50 single family homes a year. The Shawnee Brook project will be developed as well as the homes built by Ameristar. Our vision for Shawnee Brook is to establish Ameristar in the community and in the state of Delaware, and it will be our first subdivision in Delaware. Our focus was to set ourselves apart from the rest of the industry and offer a more moderate priced home in an attractive community setting, bringing in the things that would hopefully invite that person to want to live there and drive home at the end of the day and protect their investment. I personally have an extensive background in moderate and as well as affordable housing in several states I've built, as well as several different foreign countries. I have a residence in Middleburg. My plan is to help Ameristar built here in Delaware so I can retire here in hopefully maybe about 10 years. Look forward to working with the council of Sussex County and City of Milford. Thank you.
We'll go on to our first exhibit. Keith, do you think we could bring this a little bit closer, maybe? Thank you. I believe you also have a modified version of this in your in their tabs. Given that you have close to 30 tabs, I would think you've got just about everything in there. I think the only thing that would be missing from there is I think we have some arrows, perhaps, on here. Keith, you might want to stay there. As I mentioned, the project name is Shawnee Brook, and Shawnee Brook is 80 single-family lots on 34.32 acres. It's located southwest of Milford off of Old Shawnee Road, about 740 feet north of the intersection of Old Shawnee Road and Union Church Road. Is that us? There we are. Okay. Here is Old Shawnee Road. Old Shawnee Road, Route 13. 113, and here's the city of Milford up here. Just to the north of our site is the Hollies. Here's the retreat, what's it called? The retreat at Hazards Hill. Also to the east is the very large Central Park, which is 700 mixed units, and we've got Watergate, which is 700 mixed units. So as you can see, the project is directly adjacent to other residential developments to the north and to the west, and then a little bit further to the east. So it would be in character with the surrounding community. And it's located less than 1 mile from the Milford city limits and 2 miles from shopping. This area is shown as a developing area / medium density in the Sussex County comp plan, which you have at tab 4. The property is actually made up of 4 separate parcels. All of these parcels are zoned MR. They're currently used for agriculture, forest, and residential purposes. According to the Sussex County Code, the purpose of the MR district is to provide for medium-density residential development in areas which are or which are expected to become generally urban in character, but where sanitary sewers and public water supplies may or may not be available at the time of construction. The district is located to protect existing development of this character and contains vacant land considered appropriate for such development in the future. As mentioned in one of the letters that I believe you received, this is an estate strategies level 3 investment area. And according to the state strategies, investment level 3 areas are portions of county designated growth zones, development districts, or long-term annexation areas in municipal comprehensive plans that aren't in the level one or level two, and here we have it as in a developing area. Some general information about the site, as I mentioned, it's 80 single-family lots on 34.32 acres, all acres zoned MR. Zoning in MR permits 4 lots per acre, so the total number of lots which could be built theoretically on the land is 137. Here we're proposing 80. The proposed density, instead of being 4 dwelling units per acre, our proposed density is 2.33 dwelling units per acre, so it's slightly more than half of what would be allowed. The lot size, the code requires that the minimum lot size of 10,000 square feet. The largest lot size in this particular development is 17,093 square feet. The average lot size is slightly under 11,000 at 10,850 square feet. All of the dwellings will be stick-built on site, and Ameristar will be both the developer and the builder of the project. Currently, there are 2 existing dwellings on the site to be demolished. One of them is currently vacant, and one of them is occupied by the owner of the property, and they will be relocating. Keith, can you show approximately where those dwellings are located?
One structure here, one structure there.
The project will be built in... Oh, okay, he's got it. Very good. I got Vanna 1 and Vanna 2. The project will be built in 2 phases. They anticipate completing 4 units per month. Home prices are also anticipated to be around $300,000. This is a project that's actually been through 2+ hearings. So it's been plussed and it's been replussed. We actually listened to the comments that plus had to make. We made significant changes based on those comments, and that's why we went back to plus. Keith, do you have maybe the first plan that we can kind of show generally back and forth? I just want to go over the differences between the broad difference between the first plan and the second plan so you can see how it evolved over time. The first plus hearing was held on November the 22nd, 2005. The second one was about a year and a half later on March the 28th, 2002. So we took quite a bit of time and did some redesign. The plus applications are, both applications are in your book. They're at tab 11. The plus review letters are also in your book at tab 13. Our responses back to plus are in your book at tab 14 and 11. Our original plan layout, which is a copy of exactly what you see here, is tab 12. So if you can't read it very well, which I'm sure that you can't from your seat, you might want to take a look at tab 12. And our revised plan layout, which you also have here tonight, is at tab 15. So we go back. This is how we get up to 30 tabs. The major changes from the first to the second plan, the first big change that you might notice is we eliminated a double entrance. We started out with a double entrance. Here we are, right here. There's one and there's the other. DelDOT had an issue with a double entrance because they don't typically like to see them, and so they asked us to rethink that. Also, and so I'll talk a little bit more about later on, this whole front area here is an area of what they call excellent recharge. And so DENREC had a comment that they really wanted to see us reduce impervious cover in that area a bit more. So what we did in response to particularly those 2 comments was we got rid of the double entrance. We went from this to what you see here. We've chopped off about half of it, made it cul-de-sac in that area, and that got rid of quite a bit of the impervious cover issue that they were having. We also eliminated a number of lots in that excellent recharge area. We went from 16 lots up here that were impacted in the excellent recharge down to 12. So that took quite a few of them out. We also moved a lot of the open space to the front of, from back here to the front of the development, which is what you see now. And let's see, we relocated the stormwater management area from the forested area. Previously, that's where the stormwater management had been, back in the forest. We moved it more so that it's centrally located, as you see. And we eliminated a clubhouse and a pool. There was a lot of discussion as to whether or not, you know, this was a direction that we wanted to take. We ended up taking it primarily because of the financial burden. We started off with a plan that had 69 units, and the financial burden on 69 homeowners for a clubhouse and a pool was going to be somewhere around $100 to $120 a month, and it was felt that that just might be too much. So we eliminated that, which is what you'll see, and by the elimination of that, the clubhouse and the pool, movement of the stormwater management area, the elimination of the double entrance in the front and some movement of that open space, we've actually ended up with a plan that's more environmentally sensitive but yet has more units. So it's one of these rare instances where you actually see a more environmentally sensitive plan with more units. That's what really triggered us going back to plus two. I mean, we not only addressed their comments, we addressed them and then we had more units, so we went back to plus. At this point, I'd like to go through maybe this, just the specific elements of the current plan that you have before you tonight, so you've kind of seen it evolve. Under the code requires 10% open space on this development, which would be about 3.43 acres. The open space that's provided, however, is 8.63 acres, which is 25%. So we're about 2.5 times the amount of open space that's currently required in the code. Now, that open space is made up of 2.67 acres of open areas, pedestrian paths, parks, and recreational areas, 3.4 acres of forest area, 1.54 acres of non-tidal forested wetlands, and 1.3 acres of stormwater management area. Excluding the stormwater management area, the open space is still 21% of the site. So we have twice the amount that's required. We also have both active and passive open space. Active space we have as a tot lot, Keith, if you could show that. And we also have a large meadow area, which I think we thought would be very good for things like community gatherings, the picnics, you know, the summer events that the community would like to have. And it's located up near the front of the development as well. Later we're going to show you, because you're probably thinking to yourself, well, if you have it in the front, you know, what about fencing? We are actually, one of the things that Ameristar is spending a lot of time doing is making sure that the development looks nice as you drive by it. So they're doing a lot of, they've got this decorative iron fencing that's going to be coming around, the landscaping around the fencing as well. You've got the still, it's not a double entrance, but it's a large entrance with the boulevard style in the center. So the open area will be up near the front, but it's going to be behind these iron fencing, so you don't have to worry about the way that the kids running into the street. And there's a preliminary open space management plan in tab 23 in your book. There'll be sidewalks on both sides of the street. The sidewalks will be 4 feet wide. There'll be street lights that will be installed when the main service lines are installed and maintained by the City of Milford through a surcharge. With respect to DelDOT, TIS was not required for this project. DelDOT's original plus comments were all addressed and considered, and they're incorporated in the plan that you see here tonight. Specifically, some of those comments were they wanted to see a driveway easement from the Greenlee property. An out parcel, which is it's a parcel that's not really part of our development, which is right here. And DelDOT wanted to make sure that we could eliminate their driveway onto Old Shawnee Road and have them instead have an easement onto our boulevard here. So we have one of those. Of course, the reduction from two to one entrances onto Old Shawnee Road. They were very happy that we're providing interconnectivity with the Bueller property to the south. They originally had asked that we have interconnectivity to the north, up here at the Marshall property. And we went into the second plus hearing, and what we did was explain to them is that this property, this Marshall property, is a bizarre, oddly shaped little piece that looks like an E. It's like an E right along Old Shawnee Road. So it's not the kind of property that you're going to be able to develop very easily, particularly for another even minor small subdivision. So we just didn't think that that was going to be such a good idea to provide interconnectivity. And they agreed with us. So they dropped that particular request. Also, we've reserved land for a dedicated right-of-way and a permanent easement in front of the property. The particulars will be resolved when we apply for our entrance permit. That's exactly what they want to do with that easement area. The streets are going to be private, dedicated to public use. The streets will be built to Sussex County specifications, which are 24 feet wide, and they're accessed to all the lots from the internal streets. The street names have already been approved by Sussex County Mapping and Addressing. And one thing that's interesting about this property you might not see too many other places is that we have a pull-off area to accommodate a bus stop and a mail stop right in the beginning of the development. It's a little bit wider than usual to accommodate the pull-off. At this time, I'd like to talk a little bit about the environmental issues at the site. We had JCM Environmental conduct the phase one environmental site assessment. They also conducted the wetlands delineation, and a jurisdictional determination has been submitted to the Army Corps. As you know, the Army Corps doesn't typically go back and start really looking at them until you get past preliminary. So we have it in. It's been at the Army Corps since October of 2005, patiently waiting on someone's desk, and maybe it'll make its way to the top of the pile. We have, as I mentioned before, 1.54 acres of non-tidal forested wetlands on the project. There'll be no impact to the wetlands from this development, as no lots are contained. No lots contain any wetlands. Also, if we could show Bowman's Branch, show them where Bowman's, if you could, Bowman's Branch sort of cushions the around this particular development, and we're very sensitive to the environmental issues associated with that. DENREC, through its comments, had requested a 100-foot buffer. We don't have a 100-foot buffer. We have the 50-foot buffer, but we have an additional 30-foot no-clear zone in the backs of lots from lots 17 to 31. So with that additional no-clear zone, what we actually end up with is a buffer somewhere between 80 and 150 feet to Bowman's Branch. So we've done a pretty good job with that. And there are no tack stitches on site. Also, Plus had a comment that they thought that swamp pink might be present at the site. Swamp pink is a federally threatened plant. And so JCM performed an environmental site assessment on February 16th of 2007. Their report is in your exhibit book at tab 25. When they did their visit, they confirmed that there was no swamp pink plants observed. However, they did observe that potential habitat for swamp pink exists in the forested wetlands immediately adjacent to Bowman's Branch, which again is the reason why we're proposing this the no-clear zone. So we've got that 80 to 100-foot buffer. Forest. The number of acres on the site today that is wooded is 17.71 acres. The number of acres of the site that will be wooded when the property is developed is reduced. It's reduced down to 5.99 acres. So we're preserving approximately 34% of the forest. However, the amount of forested area on this property, that's the absolute worst case scenario, and I'll tell you why. There are four things, actually five particular ways that we are going to attempt to address reforestation in certain ways. Number one is selective clearing wherever possible. If you'll notice on this particular, another exhibit we have, we've kind of placed our development next to the Hollies, which is slightly north of that. And the Hollies is where they've done selective clearing. And you can see where it does make quite a bit of difference in being able to retain in some of the trees. Also, each of the lots in Shawnee Brook will have a landscape package, which includes a tree. So that's 80 trees. You've got 80 lots. Also, there are street trees within the development. Taking a look at the site plan, it looks like it's one per lot or slightly more than that. So we've got another 80 trees. Also, what we're going to do, the developer is going to do, is try to reforest part of the open space towards the front of the property and around the back. Reforest as much as we can without rendering the open meadow type areas unusable. I mean, you want shade, you want something that people are going to be able to put a picnic table under, but you don't want to reforest the whole thing because then there goes your open space and you can't do as much in it as the development might want to do. So the 34% is the worst case scenario and does not take into account the selective clearing, the landscape package, the street trees, or the reforestation. Stormwater management. Stormwater management on the property will be accomplished by two wet ponds, total acreage of 1.38 acres. Of course, the developer is going to contact the Sussex County Conservation District in the approval of a sediment and stormwater management plan, and we'll be implementing best management practices. There's something very interesting, though, with these particular lots, and that Ameristar does in about 25% of the homes that it does in Maryland, is it's going to be installing rain gardens on each of the lots, which is very interesting. A rain garden is actually recognized by DENREC as a green technology best management practice. I'll go over a brief presentation of what they are, but there's also more information about them at tab 21 in your book. The purpose of a rain garden is to capture the rooftop runoff and retain it on that particular parcel. So the rain falls on the roof, it goes into the gutter, goes through the downspout, and then is emptied into the area on the lot into this little rain garden. And rain, there are about 300, about, kind of depending on the configuration of the lot, about 300 square feet. What they are is they're a dig and replace. So you dig up the soil that has perhaps been compacted by the development that's happened. You dig it up and you put the about 2 feet or more of a soil mix on top of it with native plants. So that way when you've got water that comes off, it goes through the downspout, goes into this area, it's retained on site. So you have a lot less as far as stormwater management is concerned. That also works into the next environmental issue, which is groundwater recharge. You'll note, and as I mentioned earlier, we have an area of what's called excellent recharge, excellent groundwater recharge in the front of the property. Where that line exactly is, you'll see in tab 22 of your book. That's the map that shows it. The comments from PLUS regarding this excellent recharge area is they wanted to see two things. They wanted us to move the lots and reduce the impervious cover. So what we did was we moved the lots and we reduced the impervious cover. First, we moved from 16 to 12 lots. We moved, again, the elimination of the double entrance, the large open grassy area. And another way that we've sought to incorporate or help along not just the excellent recharge area. The rest of the property is all listed as good. It's not like there's part of it's good and part of it's excellent and the rest of it's nothing. It's all pretty good. That's why we thought the rain gardens would be such a good idea and help with stormwater management that are on the rest of the lots. We're also going to be removing the outbuildings, driveways, and accessory buildings in the excellent recharge area, which are currently there on the site that Keith is pointing to. PLUS had a new comment at the second round, which shows you never want to go through PLUS twice because you only want one round of comments, but they had a new comment the second time through, which is they did not like our pump station up in the corner of the property in the recharge area. One of the things that I haven't gotten to, this site will be served by City of Milford Water and Sewer, so there's not an issue with that. And the willing to serve letters, I believe, are in your tab 20, which I'll get to later on. But we have a pump station at the upper corner, and the reason that PLUS and Denrec in particular didn't really care for that. It was a twofold reason. Number one, compaction, and number two, contamination. They don't want to have a pump station up in the excellent recharge area because they figure you've got to have equipment running all over the site, putting in the pump station, going to be storing it there. It's a compaction issue. You've got an excellent recharge area, you keep running over it with heavy equipment, it's not going to be an excellent recharge area for very long. So what we've done is to make sure that we have sectioned off precisely where the precisely where the heavy equipment's going to be able to move around. It's going to be very confined, and we are going to have all of the storing of the staging and of all the equipment and storage of equipment back into the development, because the pump station is going to be one of the first things that's put out there. So we're not going to have folks that are living in the lots at that time. So we're going to be storing the equipment outside of the area, so we're not going to have that heavy equipment in storage. Secondly, with regard to contamination, Keith can explain to you more about the enhanced engineering controls that will be placed on this particular pump station. The pump station itself is going to be underground. Above ground, all it will be is an emergency generator that fuels the pump station. But there will be enhanced engineering controls that will address any potential contamination problems that way. Also, this is an interesting kind of a dichotomy, because pump stations are specifically and explicitly allowed in the draft Sussex County Source Water Protection Ordinance, which I know is coming up for a lot of discussion now. In fact, that part of the ordinance says all on-site wastewater treatment and disposal systems shall be permitted in recharge areas. So this is another instance, I think, of where Denrec has a particular opinion, and maybe Sussex County may have a different opinion. Another reason that we've decided to locate or would like to locate the pump station up in this particular area is because it keeps it out of the community. Once the community is built out, what they really don't want to see are trucks back and forth on the street having to deal with issues at the pump station. Lex, next we'll talk a little bit about the archaeology. PLUS, through the Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs, had some comments on the archaeology. They had found an aerial photograph from 1937, which appeared to show an old house early 1900s, located at an out parcel in the front of the property with associated barns on the property. And they were concerned with the historic barns and the visual impact from our adjacent uses on this on the historic property. We've taken a look at the aerial photographs, taken a look at the sites. Whatever barns existed there in 1937 that were on our property, we don't believe exist there now because we haven't been able to find them. Regarding the visual impact adjacent to the historic use, the area that we're talking about is up at the front of the property. So now we're what's going to be adjacent to the historic use is going to be the open space. It's going to be the landscape, the decorative fence and landscaping, the reforested area if we're going to be doing that. So I don't think we don't think that there's going to be an issue with visual impact next to historic use. As I mentioned earlier, the city of Milford is the provider of sewer and of water. Both of those willingness to serve letters are in tab 20. The pump station will be force main. Gravity mains will be constructed in accordance with all Sussex County Ordinance 38 standards and the city of Milford standards. The force main shall be constructed to the city of Milford sanitary sewer system in accordance with a written agreement dated August the 4th, 2005. So that's been taken care of. Other utilities include electric by the city of Milford. Verizon will provide telephone service. Cable provider, we expect to be either Comcast or Mediacom. Fire protection by the city of Milford. Police protection by the state police. School district, the school district that this development falls in is the Milford School District. We've supplied room for the bus shelter at the entrance to the development, but we'll be working with the school district to provide whatever they want. At this point, we have contacted the school district by letter dated January 10th of 2007, but we have not received a response back from them yet as far as their comments on this plan. Architecture, do we have a plan that may show the type of architecture we're expecting on the property? We've already talked a little bit about the entrance to the development, and these are the types of homes that are planned to be developed in Shawnee Brook, and these are the types of homes that Ameristar Homes has a lot of experience building. Basements will be an option. The architectural review of further building in the community after it's built out will be managed by the Homeowners Association. And the Homeowners Association documents, those declaration of covenants, restrictions, and easements have been sent to Newcastle County for review. They were sent back in February, and there are the required disclosures within those covenants, those required disclosures being for wetlands, for the agricultural protection notice, and for private streets.
I think you probably meant Sussex County.
Oh, I probably did. Did I say something other than that?
Yeah, you said Newcastle County.
Blow my cover. I apologize for that. It's a vastly different place. Vastly different place. The elements of Section 99-9C, I can go over with you specifically. I think that we've incorporated all of them in the presentation tonight. They are listed specifically and set forth in the executive summary in your book on pages 6 through 9, and I can certainly go through them individually if you would like. The proposed findings of fact and conditions, I think you also have in front of you as well, and that's the presentation.
All right, then. We thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see if anyone has any questions for you. Okay. Mr. Burton is with us this evening. Mr. Johnson, if you would like to start off, please.
Sure. I guess my first is more of a comment than a question. Mr. Chairman, this is the first time I've seen a project go through PLUS, and they take away amenities and add building lots. Usually take away building lots and add amenities.
A little surprise at that.
A little twist up there on that, seeing as how you went from 69 to 80 and took away some of your amenities. Could you outline for me a little better about what open space you are proposing in this and how it might be used by the residents?
Okay. In fact, I think Keith is probably a great one to talk.
Thank you, Stephanie. My name is Keith Rudy. I'm an engineer with McCrone. Basically, what we wanted to do is try to consolidate some of the open space. The original plan had a rather large clubhouse facility toward the rear of the property. What we wanted to do is we wanted to try to provide some alternates to that, focal points that would still render usable space. In particular, this is very good level usable ground, could be suitable for a number of different things. The exact use of that right now we're not real sure of. We're open to ideas and suggestions by the commission. It is good ground. It's not stuck in the periphery in the back. There is a gentle slope that picks up right around here. We're also viewing perhaps this area for possible use as amenity to be augmented by a walking trail to interconnect both sides of the of that part of the project. In addition, what we wanted to do is we wanted to try to create an area utilized for children. This is going to be not an active adult community. We want to try to provide some amenities for them, so we've included a provision for a tot lot. Now, we could easily move the tot lot down into here and consolidate other amenities away from that pump station. Again, we're open to ideas. We thought that having more of a pronounced access to an area for folks to watch their kids and walk and play made a little bit more sense. As we said previously, the developer is committed to creation of an entrance feature which would consist of landscaping and a fence. So that would prevent or mitigate having the open space right next to the road. In addition, we've also have made provisions for an additional dedication and a 15-foot permanent easement. So there already is tremendous room in between where this play equipment would be ultimately located and the actual road itself. So we feel we have several layers of buffer in between this open space and the road. Again, we have sidewalks. I think the idea for elimination of the clubhouse was a genesis or the result of several factors. One is upon evaluation of the burden to the homeowners. Again, at that older plan, 69 units, the upkeep, maintenance, staffing of that facility would be burdensome. The other facet, and we have an expert to talk about market studies, suggested that the target market that we're looking for may not necessarily want that kind of amenity. They may want to be more integral into the surrounding community by going into the city of Milford and participating and shopping there and using facilities in that area. So I guess I would turn it over to the market study guru if the commission were interested. But that kind of shaped our focus and our interest in how to put this together.
Mr. Rudy, before you continue, I need to ask you for the record. You did mention you were an engineer. Are you a registered professional engineer?
I'm a licensed professional engineer in the state of Delaware. My license number is 10564.
We do not record engineers' license numbers. We only like lawyer numbers.
All right. Well, I was just trying to follow
Ms. You did a great job, and we needed to get that on the record since you are testifying as an expert. Thank you.
Thank you.
May continue.
Again, I'm not sure if I answered your question fully, if there was a follow-up discussion.
So did I hear you're having walking trails as well or just sidewalks?
We could easily incorporate walking trails around the ponds to provide interconnectivity between those blocks. Yes, okay. We could do that.
Did I hear you say something about having a paved multi-sport court?
The rub there is this. A nice open area is located in the excellent recharge area. So we have a couple of competing factors there. If the commission would so desire, we certainly have enough room to accommodate a paved or surfaced multi-use court in that area. Absolutely.
Just to give you an idea, I have a boring social life, so I ride around looking at developments in my spare time. And recently I was in a development that does not have a paved multi-sport court, and there's a young teenager having to dribble his basketball in the middle of the street, you know, because small lots, they don't allow for the basketball courts in the front yard, and there's no backyard to put one in to start with. So little toddlers grow up to be big teenagers.
Big toddlers.
Yes.
We're open to,
I think the applicant is receptive to the recommendation, yes.
I have no further questions.
All right, sir. Mr. Gordy?
I like the open space between the roads and the houses, but when you stick in lot 41 and 42, it kind of takes it away. I like to see the developments isolated from the road, and you get an excellent recharge area there, and you're putting two houses there. So that's just a comment.
Is this 41 and 42?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, you got a nice distance between the road and the rest of the houses, and then these two are stuck in there with all the open space there. You said something about in some of the lots you'll have a no-clear zone.
Yeah.
And that would be in the deed restrictions, or how are you going to address that as far as the no-cut zone?
I guess that would be in the deed restrictions. And do you have thoughts on that, Keith?
Absolutely. In addition to being incorporated in the deed restrictions and also the open space maintenance plan, we could incorporate that on the record plan, the ultimate instrument that is recorded that could be noted specifically for those lots for the record.
That's all I have, Mr. Johnson, answer my questions.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hanson did a good job of answering my questions, things that I had about Milford and the comp plan. You're working with them, and they're providing sewer.
Yes, they are.
You're having a bus stop, sidewalks, streetlights, things throughout the community. Does the applicant feel, is there a need for parking at the tot lot for any of the homeowners that may be located a distance from that tot lot?
That's an excellent question. The fire marshal reminded me at the second plus application that parking in a cul-de-sac is prohibited. Furthermore, that would potentially represent additional impervious area in the excellent recharge area, again, where we have competing interests to try to satisfy to some degree all interest, but that is an excellent comment.
Just to save me the trouble of scaling, how far is the tot lot? What's the furthest distance walking do you imagine from the tot lot to a home site?
You can indulge me momentarily, please.
While he's checking on that, I want to ask you, if I may, Mr. Smith, Mr. Robinson, the commission, if the commission were to look favorably upon this subdivision, it is within our authority to exempt those two lots. Could we in fact approve the subdivision without those two?
I think you could make that win. That's been done in the past by the commission.
Wanted to verify. I was pretty sure we could.
Certainly, in taking any action, there has to be a reason for it. But
sure. Well, sure. And I think answering Mr. Gordy's concern, I think it, once pointed out, it does appear to be an issue. I'm sorry, Mr. Smith. Go ahead.
Oh, quite all right.
I think Mr. Rudy's just about ready
Mr.
for you.
Rudy's
hearing.
Right about there.
It's approximately 1,300 linear feet, and that actually is very close to a state-established standard that we've received in other plus comments from DART. As a reasonable distance to walk to a facility or a shelter, that sort of thing.
Quarter of a mile.
Yeah. As I found out today at the seminar, it said you can walk 300 feet in a minute unless you happen to be Keith Rudy. Does the fencing, which does appear to be attractive, does that in any way compromise any bike path or multimodals or easements that DelDOT may put on you?
We're going to find that out. I think that's part of the discussion that Keith is going to be having with DelDOT.
That's right. Right now, we have full provision in this plan for a 15-foot permanent easement, which would accommodate a full 10-foot wide multimodal path. There could conceivably be breaks at key locations in that fence to allow interconnectivity. That's a very easy thing to do. The location or presence of the fence will not actually affect the multimodal path itself.
The rain gardens on the lots, you're willing to work with the, they won't be in any right-of-ways, will they?
No, sir. They will be wholly contained on the lots and for an individual lot use. And in effect, it allows us some opportunity to do a site-specific landscape garden plan to address the intricacies and the individuality of each house type selected. So there'll be all different kinds. Each one will basically be a unique feature for each home.
I know in conversations with Mr. Izzo, he's had some questions if they'd interfere with any placement of utilities. So I'm getting from you indication that will not be the case.
No, we actually, the soil is very good throughout the subdivision, so we will be able to strategically locate these features without interfering with utilities.
Thank you. Okay. And one last question for, it was, I believe, Ms. Phillips and?
Almsfeld.
Is there a specific time of year that the swamp pink reveals its presence?
Ladies, I need you to give us your name and state your qualifications if you're going to be testifying as an expert, which you are.
I'm Shana Phillips. I'm an environmental scientist.
I'm Amy Alsfeld. I'm also an environmental scientist.
Are you licensed by any state agency or?
No.
Okay, and your educational qualifications are?
I have a BS in environmental and forest biology and a master's degree in wildlife ecology.
Okay.
And I have a BS in wildlife conservation.
Very good. Okay.
Yes, the flowering body only occurs during a certain period of time, and the greenery is evergreen and remains all year. And that should be stated in the report as well. So although we didn't observe any flowers because we were not out during that particular period of time, we were looking for the greenery, and that was not observed. Habitat was observed.
If there was swamp pink there, hypothetically, say on my land, and you came to my land that same time of year, you wouldn't see it on my land.
You wouldn't see the flowers. Correct.
You would see the what you stated.
If you knew where to look for it, yeah. You could observe the evergreen leaves under growing on hummocks, and if you knew the habitat and where to look for it, yeah.
Thank you, ladies.
You're welcome.
No other questions.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Lang?
No questions.
Mr. Counts?
Just about the open space management plan. Just want to clarify my understanding. It appears to be prepared for Ameristar Homes, and it talks about the elements that are included in the open space management plan. I'm not sure, does that include roads? Because it talks about forested areas. This would be in tab 23. Talks about the forested area and landscaped areas and identifies maintenance types of issues, but it also says provide the Ameristar home provides all maintenance and management for all open space areas, roads, and fencing, but yet roads is not included in the plan. Most importantly, near the end of it, you include routine maintenance costs and long-term maintenance costs, but there's nothing about roads in those cost estimates. Would that be a responsibility of Ameristar Homes? And should it be included in the open space management plan?
Certainly, the open space management plan can be amended to provide some contacts, assistance, links, guidance in terms of managing the private yet dedicated for public use roads. That certainly can be added.
And then to clarify that a little bit further, this is prepared
a year
for Ameristar Homes. Are they going to be responsible in perpetuity for the open space, or will it be turned over to the Homeowners Association?
I believe the intent is that it will be turned over to the Homeowners Association.
Probably would be fair that they had an idea of what all of their open space management costs would be then.
Absolutely,
that should be included.
Excellent comment.
Thank you. That's all.
Arthur, thank you. Mr. Abbott?
No questions.
Council?
No questions. Thank you.
All right, then. Well, we thank you. If you would kindly stand down for a moment, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2007-19 Ameristar Homes? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2007-19? Are there any attorneys present speaking for anyone in the opposition? Okay, there being none, we'll start with you, sir, right up front. Yep, you need to come up here, give us your name and address, and the floor is yours.
My name is Charles Garrod, G-A-R-R-O-D. I currently reside in Lewis, and I'm building my dream house in the Hollies on a lot that borders this development. I bought that land in 2002. So I've had a number of years to watch the cycles of nature. And I can tell you that the back area is not gratuitous on their part saying they're going to save that, because that's swamp land. There's a big creek that runs there. You can't clear that out. That's just protected. On the north side of this development, from about lot 3, I would think, all the way to 17, it's solid with 2-foot wide diameter trees that are 90 foot high. Now, when I talk about trying to retain trees or reforesting, usually we mean when we reforest, we plant a 3-inch tree, and we have to take down a 2-foot tree. So I don't know. This is some of the largest trees right here from a lot, I'm thinking about lot 10 to a lot 15 or 17, because that was a sportsman's club back in probably the 50s, went defunct, and at the back of our lot, I could see one of the deer stands. Last year fell over, a tree and a deer stand. Okay, I noted that they talked about, somebody did mention whether it was gonna be a deed restriction on the buffer clearing the land. I forgot who mentioned that. I'm not sure how that is enforced when the homeowner buys the property from the developer and the association takes it over. Who enforces not taking down all this vegetation? And I heard Mr. Johnson talk about La Crosse, and I thought, gee, maybe he's talking about Ameristar development. He says, wow, he says, standard lot should be 3/4 acres. This is not 3/4 acres. He says, and there are houses abutting other houses. They're not abutting open space. I said, wow. And of course, farm equipment comes down quite often on Old Shawnee Road because Milford Grain is right there. And Old Shawnee Road is a direct route outside of Milford on a way to Route 36, which is on a way to Route 13 and 16. It's a very, surprisingly, a lot of cars come there. So it's a road, maybe the kind of road that is going to have to be widened. It's near the Holly development, which is all 3/4 acre lots. Some are actually larger towards the back by the pond because they're unusable land by the pond. And you're near the retreat at Hazards Hills, which is very large lots and very large houses. Then you have a smaller development off of Meadowbrook, which is called the Heath, and I think that's been there quite a while. Here, Ameristar say, well, we want to build affordable houses. I think affordable houses are a good thing. I'm from New Jersey. We got a lot of affordable houses in New Jersey, and we have a lot of houses that aren't affordable. But what we do have in New Jersey is high density. When you move down to Delaware from New Jersey, you say, I'm glad to get out of there, down to God's land. So I have to say that I'm really concerned about bringing in a subdivision where the lots are so small compared to the existing area. It's just not right. The pumping station is next to Mr. Marshall's house. I don't think with new development should come and put a pumping station next to somebody else's house. They should put it next to their houses. And as far as compacting the land or not having trucks, that's a nice comment. But, you know, that land is like seashore land. I dig on that land all the time. It has a recharge. I noticed during heavy rain, if the water stays there 2 days, it stays there a lot in a swale. But the water disappears. On the rear northern corner of my lot, when we had our lot surveyed for septic and whatever, that was red flagged as an area not to put the septic field there because it had a bad recharge. So I had to move my septic field south of my lot. So I don't know what they're talking about having that as a good recharge area, because it wasn't a good recharge, not on my lot. And I don't know if 5 foot later you have a miraculous change of land.
It's, well, okay. I talked about the pumping station. The $300,000 approximate selling price. Actually, I have to tell you that the houses in that area, in the developments in that area, sell for a lot more money than $300,000. Not that I think somebody shouldn't have affordable housing, because nearby there are houses being sold for $170,000. So it's a good thing. The rain garden, rainwater harvesting is a good thing. I'm in favor of that. And today the equipment is commercial equipment on a market. You can just buy it, just buries in the ground. I don't even see it. When somebody made a comment, is it visible? I don't think it's a problem. I just think it's a nice idea. I'm worried about taking all the trees down, though. I think somebody commented, maybe it was the attorney commenting, that Mr. Marshall's property is like an E and couldn't be developed into a small development. He also owns four very large lots in the Hollies. I believe he has enough space on the land behind him and the Hollies land and access to his property to run a road in and do some development there. So it's not that will never be developed. And that's pretty much, was that pretty much my comments?
Ma'am, if you're going to speak, you need to come up, give us your name. We'd love to have you, but the tape does not recognize your face.
I am Gail Garrett. I also reside in the Hollies. I'm also treasurer of the Homeowners Association in the Hollies.
Thank you.
My major concern is that 30-foot buffer zone. I know in the Hollies that we have selective tree removal. But I've also seen somebody come in, cleared the entire lot, took down every tree. Yes, he replanted some trees, but the trees that he replanted were much smaller than what he took down. What do we have, other than your deed restrictions, which a lot of people, being on a board,
yeah. Ma'am,
no attention
to speak to us, not the applicant. Go ahead.
Many people in the development don't stay with all of the deed restrictions. And my concern is, since we are going to have a full lot behind us and two half pots behind us, what's going to prevent those people from moving in and clearing it out to my lot? That's my concern. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, my name is Leroy Hitchens. I live there in district in front of this property that they're trying to develop for 37 years. In 2002, the traffic on Oshawnee Road was like over 5,000 cars in a 24-hour period. Last year, that same period, was 5,600 and some cars. They failed to mention that up on the north end of Oshawnee Road, they're building Brookstone Terrace right now with 119 units, which I'm sure you here approved of that. It's in Sussex County. What we're going to do, we're going to have a lot of problems with traffic, which we deal with trucks. And my grandkids cannot come over today like they did when I built there 37 years ago with the traffic the way it is. And this property is just directly in front of my house, and I do not want to see it come there. And that's all I have to say about it.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak in opposition? Yes, sir.
Thomas Greenley. I live at 6552 Old Shawnee Road, which is this development will border me on three sides, with Old Shawnee Road being in front of me. I guess I've got three concerns, one being the traffic. My wife leaves the house at 8 o'clock in the morning, and she says frequently she has to wait 5 minutes or more to get out of the driveway. Now, Also drainage. I've talked of two storm gardens. My question is, are they sufficient? I know there's a couple places, I think one of them is in front of the Hollies. I know we haven't had any rain lately, but heavy rain, sometimes that water will intrude out on the road. And I guess my third question is, this development's gonna be hooked into the city of Milford sewer and water. What effect is that gonna have on me in the future if I need a new well or need a new septic system, and am I gonna be able to, or am I gonna be forced to go with this, city of Milford? Do you need my license, Summer? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question?
You may.
Would you point your property out on that?
I think.
Is it right next to that row of trees?
Yeah.
Right here?
Okay, so it's part of the green area that's shown on this drawing of the layout. I'm just curious, it's not identified as now or formally anybody else's property on the drawing.
I thought it was part of the development.
That's my point. Both on the subdivision plat that we have before us and on the drawing, it leaves the impression that it's included as part of the property, or at least not exempt from the property under consideration. I don't think that's consistent with the requirements of our ordinance.
Would you step over there and show us where that property is again? I couldn't see, but from...
He was in front of
us. Right in here. During the discussion from Ms. Hansen, she discussed about how there was going to need to be an easement to the Greenlee property, which is right here. Probably should not have colored that green.
And probably should,
and should have identified it as not being part of your development.
That's correct. On the preliminary plan...
In your profession, that's the equivalent to running a red light.
On the preliminary plan, I do believe we call out the now or formally. Based on...
On the first submission to PLUS, it was identified as now or formally property, and that's why the comment was made about the suggestion to move the...
On the survey?
Tab 6.
Okay. It's on the survey, but it's not on the subdivision drawing.
Understood. Just might clarify it a little bit. There should have been an hour for me.
Okay. All right, we're good. Just ran a yellow light, not a red. Anyone else would like to speak in opposition? Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir, you've already been up once. One trip to a customer. You can ask the missus to come up if you want. Okay. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Okay. Anyone on the commission have any questions? There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We thank you for being with us this evening, and we invite you to spend the rest of your Thursday evening with us to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to just call the office in the morning.